Some of you remember that movie, I'm sure. Some of our kids are like, wait, I thought they were only in a Christmas movie. I didn't know it was another one. Just imagine, right? Remember the movie. They had traveled all the way to California from Illinois, right? Now, in today's age, you feel like that would never happen, because if you're making a trip that far, you're going to be online, getting everything planned out perfectly, so maybe this movie won't work for very long. But still, we can all imagine what it would be like to have that massive letdown of traveling all that way, all the excitement. If you've watched the movie, all the stuff that happens beforehand until they finally get there and they're so excited, and then the incredible disappointment, the incredible letdown. Now, I don't know that the exact scene would happen today, but still we experience it sometimes. Maybe you're at a museum or an amusement park, and the ride that you really wanted to ride is down, or the exhibit is on, it's out on traveling exhibit or something like that. Most tickets nowadays are on your phones, but every once in a while you got to have the hard tickets. Maybe you forget those, leave those behind. There's still some things in our lives that can happen that we can relate to. Now, most Easter weekends, my family has come to be with us, but because of some scheduling things, we went up to my mom and dad's this past weekend, so they're not here, which is fantastic, because I could tell you this story with no punches pulled. But I want to tell you this. When you see that story, the Griswolds, all of you can think, if that ever happened to somebody, I know who would happen. Like, we all have that family or that person in mind. We're like, I know who that would happen to. And this morning, I want to begin this morning by telling you, we are that family. Not me and my wife and my kids, but my mom and dad and my brother and sister, we were that family. I think I was in middle school, and we had a cousin that had gone down to Kings Island for a weekend, and they had this great time, and it was like in the spring, and it just opened up. And it was kind of this time of year where you're just tired of being inside, and the weather was finally turning nice. And so my cousin was telling my parents how much fun they had, and the park wasn't that full. And so my parents, being the great parents they were, they said, you know what? These parks are really busy on the weekend. So they took us out of school, and we drove all the way to Kings Island, which from Defiance is like 3.5 hours. And we pulled into the parking lot, and it looked like Wally World. Because my parents had no idea that at first the park is only open on the weekends. And so we got down there like on Tuesday, nothing going on. So I don't remember what we did that week, which is probably part of the moral of the story. I remember the tragedy of the event more than what we actually did. And I don't think my dad punched a Bernstein bear, but I think that the ride afterwards was probably not very pleasant. So I have that, and I would have told you that without showing you the clip, but you would all said, oh, he's just making it. I'm telling you, it happened. I had to text my mom this weekend. She didn't ask me any questions, which is funny. I said, hey, did we go in the spring or the fall? Because I couldn't remember. She's like, oh, the spring. And then she never asked any questions. And I thought, what do you think I want to use that for? More power to you. When it comes to vacations, that's like the worst case scenario. You know, especially as parents, you have, this perfect, amazing trip. Usually there's all these months of looking forward to it. And when something goes wrong, it's the worst feeling, because it's not just that moment, which we all deal with. We have disappointments and things that come along. But typically for a vacation, I mean, you've been spending all that time looking forward to it. There was all that anticipation. And as we get into our sermons this morning, I think it's the perfect atmosphere, the perfect disappointment that Easter speaks into. Like, sometimes we forget, we rush from Good Friday to Easter Sunday, and it's just this big celebration. But we forget to just pause and lean into the disappointment and frustration that the people must have been feeling. The incredible disappointment that they had, because there was so much buildup, there was so much expectation. Like, if you want to follow the liturgical calendar for a minute, imagine all the excitement and the waiting of Advent. And you're waiting and you're waiting, and then finally Christmas comes. And Christmas is here, but Jesus has got to wait 30-some-odd years before we're ready to really get to business and ministry. And so you wait all that time. And finally that comes, and there's all this scuttling of, hey, something big is happening. Something significant is going to take place. And there's this buildup to what it's going to be, what it's going to be. And I think that a lot of that was going on at the time of the great Good Friday, Holy Weekend. That there was all of this expectation, because they were traveling to Jerusalem, and all these people had come from all over. There were people who traveled from the outlying areas in the towns. There were people who had made a couple day travel, and they traveled on foot. They traveled on camel and donkey, and some of them didn't have hardly the money to make it. But there was just this feeling that this Passover was going to be different, that something dynamic was about to take place. And so everybody was on their way in. And then there was a great triumphal entry we talked about last week. And it just seemed to be this confusion of, I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but something's going to happen. And it just starts to kind of take hold, and everybody's telling everybody else, I think we should go to Jerusalem. I think we need to be there. There's this guy named Jesus, and there's been this expectation all along anyways, throughout our entire life, that God was going to do something with one of our own people and deliver us. For the first time in generations, something significant was going to take place. And all these prophets that have been prophesying for centuries, and all this buildup seemed to finally be reaching its climax. And then all of a sudden, there's this trial. Yeah, his inner disciples probably knew that things were really starting to take shape that last week or two. But most everybody didn't see it coming. There was all of this scuttlebutt that, hey, I think there's this trial in the middle of the night and all this stuff happens. And all of a sudden, all that excitement that had been built up, it came crashing down. It was this huge disappointment. That it wasn't, I mean, Wally's World's closed. Only they hadn't come to Jerusalem to ride roller coasters and eat funnel cake. It was a far deeper level of disappointment. They thought this guy was the guy. They thought he was going to change everything. Change their lives, change their nation. I bet a lot of them had daggers with them and they were ready to fight. I mean, they thought this was the moment. And not only does he die, it's not like he fell off a camel on the way into town and had this horrible accident. It was even worse. I mean, he had gone to the worst of the worst punishments. And everybody saw him there. And so if there was any questions about what had happened to him, that came down with the just sad answer that, yeah, he was murdered. He was killed on the cross. Blood, we saw it. We saw the sword in the side. Blood and water separated. He was dead. They took him to a tomb and it's over. Imagine that level of disappointment. When everybody was just like on the cusp of a game-winning field goal or something to happen at the end of the game, and you're just at the tip, and then all of a sudden you come crashing down because he missed. All of a sudden it wasn't what it was supposed to be. It's hard to kind of get the full picture, but it's very clear that there were a lot of people in Jerusalem with a lot of vested interest that something dynamic was going to take place. That their lives were fundamentally going to change. And it's this disappointment that Easter speaks into. Like, until you come to terms with that disappointment, you can't truly get the meaning and impact of Easter. Because they were at the bottom. And so we're going to begin reading in Luke chapter 24 this morning. Very early on Sunday morning, the women went to the tomb. Taking the spices they had prepared, they found that the stone had been rolled away from the entrance. So they went in, but they didn't find the body of the Lord Jesus. As they stood there puzzled, two men suddenly appeared to them, clothed in dazzling robes. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. The men asked, "Why are you looking among the dead for somebody who's alive? He isn't here, he's risen from the dead. Remember what he told you back in Galilee? That the Son of Man must be betrayed into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and that he would rise again on the third day." Then they remembered that he had said this, and so they rushed back from the tomb to tell his 11 disciples and everyone else what had happened. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and several other women who told the apostles what had happened. But the story sounded like nonsense to them. And so they didn't believe it. Except Peter. Peter was like, I'm going to go check this out for myself. And so he ran up, got up, and he jumped, and he ran to the tomb to look. He stooped down, and he saw that there was empty linen wrappings, and then he went home again, wondering what had happened. Now, if you've been here the last couple of weeks, you must think, why does he keep preaching the same sermon over and over and over again? Nobody seemed to get it. Like, even after he's dead and after the tomb is empty, nobody seemed to understand what the mission of Jesus was. And maybe initially, we're allowing some... Okay, I get that they don't get it. We talked about Judas a couple of weeks ago. I get that Judas didn't understand it, right? I mean, Judas was Judas. He betrayed him, so of course he didn't get it. And a couple weeks ago, we talked about Pilate. Of course Pilate didn't get it. He was a Roman. He was more concerned about his political well-being than what was happening with the Jews. Okay, I understand that he didn't get it. And last week, we looked at the two criminals who were crucified alongside Jesus, and they were on their last leg. They were about to die. One gets it and has this last-minute confession, but the other doesn't, and that's understandable. He's lived his whole life. He's about to die. We get that he doesn't get the full picture of Christ. But this morning, we come to the inner circle of Jesus' disciples, and we think, surely they get it. They've spent more time with him than anybody. And so imagine the scene. It's an incredible story. I love this picture. You get the 11 disciples. Judas is over doing his deal. But you have the 11 disciples who are remaining, and they're sitting there talking to each other. And imagine what the conversation must have been. I mean, they spent 3 years of their lives following this man, committing to their lives to this man, saying, yeah, we're going to take up your ministry, and we're going to continue to do this. And now he's gone, and they're probably sitting there going, maybe we should take a vote, guys. Just go back to our own villages. Go back to fishing. I mean, our lives are changed because of the time we spent with Jesus, but he's gone now. What are we going to do? And I think they're so caught up in their conversation with each other that these women come and they're like, man, guys, hey, they don't even hear the story about the empty tomb. They don't hear any stories about these talking angels. They don't even hear it. They just dismiss them. Ladies, crazy. Come on, go get away from me. Peter catches wind of it. He chases and wants to find out for himself. What I find fascinating is that Jesus doesn't pop out from behind a tree and go, surprise! I'm here! Like, why doesn't he show up to those guys? Like, they had the most vested interest in what was going to happen because they were going to continue on with the mission of the church. And so why doesn't he show up there? It's fascinating to me that he doesn't show up there. He appears first to the women. And then we have this amazing story that reminds us that it wasn't just the ministry of the 12 apostles that were so vested in his ministry, that there were ladies there. And these ladies were following around this broader sense of the disciples. And then later on in Luke 24, we meet these other two guys. One guy's name is Cleopas. The other guy, we don't even know his name. Cleopas doesn't show up anywhere else in the Bible except for Luke 24. It's incredible that the 11 apostles that are still there, we know their names. We know a lot about Peter and James and John. And we know a little bit about the others, but he didn't show up to them. But there's this unnamed disciple on his way to a place called Emmaus. We don't even know where Emmaus was. They've never been able to find it. They're not exactly sure what Emmaus was. It's a small outlying area. And these two disciples are walking along, and they are distraught. It's like they're standing in the parking lot to Wally World and they realize it's closed and they're turning around and walking back. And they're trying to figure out, just like the apostles, what's next? Like, they were so convinced that when they got to Jerusalem that whatever Jesus of Nazareth was going to do, it was going to change their lives forever. And then he's dead. They give it an extra day just to make sure that they weren't wrong. Still nothing. And so they start to just walk back. And what follows in Luke 24 is probably one of the most profound passages in all the Bible. That same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. Plenty of time to solve the world's problems. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them. But God kept them from recognizing him. And so he said, surprise! I wish that was in the Bible. Like, it just seemed like it would be a more dramatic moment. But instead he starts walking along. They don't even recognize him. What are you guys talking about? He says. They stopped short. This passage will tell us all that we need to know about the circumstances surrounding Jesus' death in Jerusalem. They stopped short, sadness written on their faces. And then one of them, the guy named Cleopas, you got to be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the stuff that's happened the last couple days. So there was a lot of buildup. There was a lot of expectation to the point where somebody asked the question, what are you guys talking about? And they're just shocked. What are you talking about? You got to be the only guy that doesn't know that we're sitting here going, man, were we wrong? Jesus said, well, what are you talking about? The things that happened to Jesus. The man from Nazareth, they said. He was a prophet. He did amazing miracles. He was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death. And they crucified him. All of that stuff is fact. There's no question about any of those things. He was a great teacher. He had a great following. He was crucified by the religious leaders. We had hoped that he was the Messiah who would come to rescue Israel. And this all happened 3 days ago. We hoped that he was the one. We've waited for 3 days. And at some point you look at each other and go, hey, we got to get on with our lives. Then some of the women in our group of the followers were at the tomb this morning, and they came back with an amazing report. They said that his body was missing, and that they had seen angels who told them that Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, the body was gone, just as the women had said. And then Jesus speaks up and says, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe that all the prophets who wrote in the scriptures, wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all things before entering his glory?" And then Jesus took them through the teachings of Moses and the prophets, and he explained from all the scriptures the things concerning himself. By the time they were coming to Emmaus and the end of their journey, Jesus acted as if he was going to continue to go on, that he had other things to do, but they begged him, "Stay with us for the night since it's getting late." And so he went home with them. They sat down to eat. He took bread and blessed it. He broke it and gave it to them. It's like Brian talked about earlier. He has communion with them. And suddenly their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. Man, if there was one place in the Bible you could be a fly on the wall, wouldn't this be the one? To see their faces. And at the very moment their faces get that look, dude's gone. He's gone. And so then they're probably going, what was in that food we just ate? Because I feel like, and you could just imagine them trying to talk about what happened. But it didn't take them long. They said to each other, wait a second, our hearts were burning within us as he talked on the road and explained the scriptures to us. How did we miss it? And he was right there with us. And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who had gathered with him, who said, "The Lord is really risen. He appeared to Peter." I mean, I love this story. This story is at the heart of our faith in Christianity. Jesus tells them once more, didn't it say clearly in the scriptures that the Messiah was going to have to suffer? Like, you guys have been following me around all these, do you still not get the point of me being here? And then there's this little verse that it's easy to just kind of gloss over, where it says, suddenly their eyes were opened and they recognized him. That it wasn't merely like Jesus had a wig on and they didn't quite get it. There was something spiritual about this moment. There was a spiritual darkness kind of clouding them. It said at the beginning of the story that they were kept from recognizing him. To see the power of the resurrection, all of us have to have our eyes open. I mean, that's kind of at the heart of our message this morning. Is it at the heart of the resurrection? To really believe, to really have your life changed, you've got to have your eyes open. And I don't know how that works. It seems to work differently to different people. But sometimes they just get it. We just get it. And in the moments we don't get it, we go back and we read scripture and we go, you know what? We're in pretty good company. Because there's a lot of people who spent every day with Jesus and didn't get it. But these disciples had their eyes opened. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, Cameron read a little bit of it, if Christ has not been raised, all our preaching is useless and our faith is useless. Our faith is useless, he goes on to say, and you're still guilty of your sins. The resurrection is everything. It's everything. If you haven't been in our class on Sunday morning, stick around this morning. We're going to talk a little bit more about the meaning and significance of the resurrection. We spent the last 2 weeks talking about the virgin birth and the crucifixion, and all those things matter, but nothing is more important than the resurrection. It became the rallying cry for the church. He is risen indeed. The Bible is full of all of these expressions trying to convey the significance of the resurrection. What does it mean that God loves you and that Christ is resurrected? In Ephesians 3:20, Paul says that God's divine power is given us beyond what we can ask or imagine. Psalm 84:10 says that one day in God's courts is better than 1,000 days elsewhere. That spending one day with God is better than spending 3 years somewhere else. And then at the end of Revelation, at the end of the Bible, there's this beautiful picture as God is trying to reveal to John the significance of all that has happened. Because in the beginning of his revelation in John chapter 4 and 5, we're told that Jesus' resurrection is what was kind of the key to open the redemptive story. That it was the most important thing, because if you remember at the beginning of chapter 5, John cries and cries because there's nobody to open the scroll. There's nobody to set forth those actions. And an angel comes and says, no, there is one. It's the lamb that looks as though he's been slain. And Revelation begins to talk in sometimes kooky language about all these different things that are going to take place. But at the end of verse chapter 21, we get this amazing, beautiful picture. And I'm sure that it's God trying to get across to us significance and beauty and wonder of what Christ's resurrection means. Revelation 21, verse 15. The angel who talked to me held in his hand a gold measuring stick to measure the city, its gates, and its wall. When he measured it, he found it was a square as wide as it was long. In fact, its length and width and height were all 1,400 miles. And when he measured the walls and found them to be 216 feet thick according to the human standard used by the angel, and the wall was made of jasper, and the city was made of gold and clear as glass. The wall of the city was built on foundation of stones. Inlaid were 12 precious stones, the first jasper and sapphire and agate and emerald and onyx, and he goes on with every beautiful gem that he can imagine. The 12 gates were made of pearls, each gate from a single pearl, and the main street was pure gold, as clear as glass. I saw no temple in the city, for the Lord Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. And the city has no need of sun or moon, for the glory of God illuminates the city, and the Lamb is its light. The nations will walk in its light, and the kings of the world will enter the city in all their glory. Its gates will never be closed at the end of the day because there is no night there. And all the nations will bring their glory and honor into the city. Nothing evil will be allowed to enter, nor anyone who practices shameful idolatry or dishonesty, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. That is the promise that awaits all of us. I don't know what all those specific things mean. I think it's just this trying to convey of, just imagine the greatest, most amazing place you can think of, and it's better. It's like we've all driven into the empty parking lot at Wally World. And as we're sitting there disappointed that there's nothing to do and that it's just not what we expected, that the trip has brought us to a place that is so much better than we could have imagined. It's like the vacation plans got disrouted or disjointed, and somehow, some way, it ends up working out even better than what you thought. That's the message of the cross, and it's the message of the resurrection, that they didn't understand what it was, and they were disappointed that it didn't work out the way that they thought it was going to. 3 days later, Christ comes back and says, guess what, guys? You were wrong. But it's better now. It's better. He is risen. He is risen indeed. The message this morning, I hope you'll cherish it in your hearts because it is the most important thing that you'll ever hear. I'm convinced of it every day. Let's stand and sing this song, celebration this morning.